Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today is January 29th, 2026. And I have to say, if you were looking for one single day that just perfectly captures the absolute chaos, the ambition, and the sheer contradiction of the tech world right now,
this is it.
Today is that day. It feels like the entire industry just looked at the rule book, shrugged, and, threw it into a bonfire.
It really does. I've been tracking this sector for a long time, and I can't remember a 24-hour period quite like this. It's a day of massive paradoxes.
Right.
We were seeing the death of these iconic physical products, things we thought were the bedrock of their companies, being sacrificed for these, for these sci-fi dreams that may or may not even work.
And the money is acting so weird. We're seeing checkbooks opening up for amounts that just sound fake, while at the same time, the stock market is absolutely punishing companies for spending that same money. It's a schizophrenic market.
It is. We've got a stack of sources today that just paint a wild picture. We're talking about a $100 billion raise.
With a B.
Yes. With a B for a project called Stargate. We've got Elon Musk making an announcement that sounds like, I don't know, the plot of a movie, effectively killing his darlings, and then just a literal bloodbath for Microsoft on the stock market.
And on top of that, we have some actual hardware news that affects the gear in our houses right now. New ways of thinking about Wi-Fi that involve, like, putting AI inside your router, and a design shift from Samsung that has the internet arguing about physics versus looking pretty.
And just to keep us from spiraling into total existential dread, we'll wrap up with one thing that actually seems to be working correctly today. A video game sequel that managed to launch without, completely exploding.
A rare treat in 2026. But look, our mission today is to connect these dots. We're not just reading headlines here. Yeah. We need to understand this massive shift from the era of chatbots, which we've all gotten used to this new era of agents and robotic labor. Mm-hmm. And we really need to figure out why the stock market is having a full-blown panic attack about the bill for all of this.
That's the core tension, isn't it? It's the cost of the future versus the reality of today's quarterly earnings.
So let's just jump right into the big number. The lead story everywhere, Financial Times, Bloomberg, you name it, is OpenAI. They have successfully raised $100 billion.
Just pause on that number for a second. $100 billion. Mm-hmm. That is not a startup seed round. That resembles the defense budget of a G7 nation. Mm-hmm. It's an astronomical amount of liquid capital to dump into a single initiative.
It's staggering. And the coalition behind this, it's not just a few VCs hoping for a quick IPO. It's NVIDIA, Amazon, SoftBank, the titans of industry. But here's where it gets really interesting. Sam Altman, the head of OpenAI, he clarified something crucial.
He did.
He said this money isn't just for training the next GPT. It's for Project Stargate.
Right. And this is the pivot point for the entire industry. For the last 3 or 4 years, the whole narrative has been about training. We need chips to read the internet, learn to speak English. But Stargate isn't a classroom. It's a factory. It's an infrastructure project.
So they're building the largest supercomputer in human history.
That's the goal.
The reports are calling it a hosting environment for digital life. I mean, that sounds, it sounds like something out of a cyberpunk novel. But practically speaking, what does that actually mean?
It means we are crossing the threshold from chatbots to agents. Hmm. And that phrase, digital life, really matters because an agent is just fundamentally different from the tools we've been using.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because for a lot of people, and honestly, sometimes for me, an AI is an AI. I type in a box, it gives me an answer. What's the real difference between a chatbot and an agent that justifies a $100 billion computer?
Okay, so think of it in terms of loops and autonomy. A chatbot operates on a single loop. You give it an input, say, how do I start an LLC?
Right.
And it predicts the next most likely words. It gives you an output, it talks, it's like a consultant that gives you a to-do list. Step one, register here. Step two, pay this fee.
Right. It tells me what to do, but I'm still the one who has to go do it. I'm still clicking the mouse and putting in my credit card info.
Exactly. You are the engine. The AI is just the map, but an agent.
Yeah.
An agent has agency and tool use. You tell an agent, start an LLC for me. And then, and this is the crucial part, you walk away. You go get a coffee.
So it's not just simulating the conversation about the work. It is actually executing the work.
Precisely. The agent takes that high-level goal, start LLC, and it breaks it down into a chain of thought. It autonomously opens a headless browser. That's a web browser with no visual interface.
Right. Okay.
It navigates to the government registration portal. It fills out the forms with your data. If the website crashes, the agent just hits refresh. If there's a catch-up, it solves it. It uses an API to pay the fee with your funds. It goes to a domain registrar, buys the URL, spins up a server, launches the website.
That is just a massive leap in complexity.
It is. And just think about the compute cost. A chatbot answers you once. Done. That's one unit of processing. An agent, to do that whole business registration, might need to run, I don't know, 50,000 inference steps. It has to think, check its work, navigate, correct its own errors, verify outcomes. It's running constantly until the job is done.
So if you have millions of people using agents, you're not just processing text anymore. You're simulating millions of digital workers who are clicking and scrolling 24/7.
Right. And that brings us all the way back to Stargate. Running billions of these autonomous agents requires a level of compute that our current power grids and data centers simply cannot handle. We're talking about needing gigawatts of power. That's why they need the 100 billion. They aren't just buying chips. They're practically building power plants.
So NVIDIA and Amazon are in effect betting that traditional human labor, the whole service economy is ending, or at least shifting entirely to silicon.
That's the implication, yeah. If this works, the workforce isn't limited by how many people are born or how many graduate from college. It's only limited by how much energy you can produce and how much silicon you can manufacture. It decouples economic output from human population.
That is a terrifying and exhilarating thought. But, and here is the massive contradiction we talked about at the top, while OpenAI is popping champagne over this $100 billion, their biggest backer, Microsoft, just got absolutely hammered.
Hammered is the right word. Microsoft stock, MSFT, crashed 10% in after-hours trading. That is their worst drop in 3 years.
And this is so puzzling because they own roughly half of OpenAI. So if OpenAI is winning, shouldn't Microsoft be winning? Why is the market punishing them?
It all comes down to one scary number in their financial report, $30 billion.
For what?
That is their capital expenditure or CapEx for just one quarter.
Wait, $30 billion in 3 months? That's $120 billion a year pace.
Exactly. They spent $30 billion building data centers, buying those H200 chips, laying fiber. And Wall Street looked at that number, and then they looked at the revenue coming in from Copilot and Azure AI.
And I'm guessing the math didn't quite add up.
Not even close. The revenue isn't covering the mortgage, so to speak. In finance, you look for ROIC, return on invested capital. And right now, the return is basically invisible compared to the spend.
Right.
They're burning cash at a rate that scares investors.
The report mentioned a disillusionment phase, warning from Goldman Sachs. That sounds pretty dramatic for a bank report.
It was a brutal note. The Goldman analyst used a perfect analogy. They said companies are building a railroad with no trains.
Ouch. Let's dig into that a little.
Well, think about the tech boom of the 19th century, right?
Mm.
You had companies laying down all these expensive steel tracks across the country. That's what Microsoft is doing now, building the tracks, the data centers, the chips. But a railroad only makes money if you have trains carrying cargo.
And the cargo is the killer app.
Exactly. Where is the product that generates enough profit to pay for a $30 billion railroad? Right now, outside of coding assistants, it doesn't really exist at that scale. We have cool demos, sure, but we don't have that massive revenue engine yet.
So we're in this sort of weird limbo. OpenAI gets rewarded for the promise of the future, these agents we just talked about, while Microsoft is getting punished for the bill we have to pay today to build them.
Precisely. The market loves the dream, but it absolutely hates the receipt. And right now, the receipt is sitting on the table, and it's massive.
Speaking of dreams and radical pivots, let's move to Elon Musk. Because if you thought the OpenAI news was big, what's happening at Tesla is, well, it's emotional for a lot of car fans. It really feels like the end of an era.
It absolutely is. It's the closing of the first chapter of the EV revolution.
So Musk announced on X last night that the Fremont factory is halting production of the Model S and the Model X next month. Huh. Just completely.
And for context, for people who maybe just see Tesla as the car company, the Model S is the car that put them on the map. Before the Model S, electric cars were basically glorified golf carts. The Model S proved they could be fast and sexy and desirable and have long range.
It's the icon. It's like Apple canceling the MacBook. Why would you kill your flagship? Even if it doesn't sell as much as the Model Y, the brand halo alone seems worth keeping.
You'd think so. But Musk is looking at the numbers and he sees a trap. The EV market is just saturated. You have these aggressive competitors, specifically from China, BYD, Xiaomi, and they're driving margins straight into the ground.
It's a race to the bottom on price.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Selling cars is becoming a low-margin, high-stress commodity business. And Musk doesn't want to be in a commodity business. He wants to be in a monopoly business.
So he's pivoting to robots.
Optimus Gen 4. He's converting those legendary Model S production lines to mass-produce humanoid robots. He calls it a blue ocean strategy.
Blue ocean, as in a market with no sharks in it yet.
Right. No competitors. And his logic, which he explained in the press conference, is pretty compelling if you buy into the tech. He said, and I'm quoting here, a car just moves you around and sits parked 90% of the time. An Optimus robot can work 24/7.
It implies a shift in value, right? A car is a depreciating asset. A robot is a productive asset. It can do the dishes, shop for groceries, work in a factory. It actually generates value.
Musk claims the robot market is worth 10 times the automotive market. And here's the kicker, the detail that made everyone's jaw drop. He's targeting a production of 10,000 robots a month by the end of 2026.
That seems incredibly optimistic, given we've barely seen them walk without stumbling in past demos.
Well, the Gen 4 is supposedly different. New actuators, new battery density. But the real shocker is the price point. He's targeting $20,000.
That's less than a cheap car. That's less than a Honda Civic.
Exactly. If you can actually sell a functional humanoid robot for 20 grand, it's the biggest industrial revolution of the century. It changes every household, every factory. It democratizes labor, the way the Model T democratized travel.
But the risk is just massive. He's sacrificing guaranteed revenue from his high-end cars for a product that, let's be honest, we haven't seen work at that scale yet.
It's an all-in bet. If he fails, he's gutted Tesla's heritage and its revenue for a sci-fi dream. The stock could go zero.
Mm-hmm.
But if he succeeds, he owns the labor market. It's classic Musk vet the company on the next impossible thing.
It really is. So connect this back to the first segment for me. We have OpenAI building these digital agents to replace office work, and now Musk building humanoid robots to replace physical work.
Exactly. It's a pincer movement on human labor. One takes the cognitive load, the spreadsheets, the emails, the booking. The other takes the physical load, the lifting, the cleaning, the assembly. I'm starting to see why everyone is freaking out a little bit. There's a lot of change hitting all at once.
It is. But let's bring it down to something a bit more tangible. We can't buy a Stargate computer, and we can't buy an Optimus yet, but we can buy a router. And this news from ASUS caught my eye because it feels like AI is finally leaking into the boring utility stuff in our houses.
Yes, ASUS unveiled the first Wi-Fi 8 routers. This is the IEEE 802.11bn standard.
Colin, we barely just got Wi-Fi 7. I haven't even upgraded my phone to Wi-Fi 7 yet. Do we really need another number?
I know. Technology waits for no one. But this isn't just about speed. Usually a new Wi-Fi generation just means faster download. This is about intelligence.
Right. The report says these new routers have an NPU, a neural processing unit. That's a chip you usually find in AI servers or high-end phones. Why does my router need a brain?
Because up until now, routers have been blind. They just move data packets around like a conveyor belt. They don't know what the data is. To a normal router, a packet from a 4K movie download looks exactly the same as a packet from a competitive video game.
But those two things have very different needs. A movie can buffer.
Exactly. If a movie packet arrives 10 milliseconds late, you won't even notice because the buffer handles it. But in a game like Counter-Strike or Valorant, 10 milliseconds is the difference between clicking ahead and getting shot. It's the difference between winning and losing.
So what does the NPU actually do?
It uses something called AI packet isolation. It analyzes traffic patterns in real time. So it's not just looking at the address on the envelope. It's analyzing the behavior of the stream. It recognizes, oh, this user has launched a latency-sensitive application.
Yeah, that?
It creates a dedicated, isolated tunnel for your game data. It's like opening a VIP lane on a highway that no one else is allowed to use.
So even if my roommate is downloading a massive torrent file or streaming 8K video on the same network,
the router grabs your game packets, pulls them out of the queue, and gives them priority processing. ASUS claims this reduces network jitter to absolute zero.
That is actually incredible for gamers. It's solving the roommate problem without me having to yell at someone to get off Netflix.
It is. It's another example of AI moving from generating text to managing infrastructure. It's making the hardware smarter about how it manages resources, which is a trend we are going to see everywhere.
Speaking of hardware design, we have to talk about Samsung. We got a huge leak from Taking Game Night about the Galaxy S26 Ultra, and it sounds like the design team has been fighting with the engineering team, and the engineers won.
It's the return of the island.
The camera island.
Yes. For the last few years, Samsung had that water drop design, individual lenses just sort of sticking out of the back. It was very minimalist, very clean.
I liked it. It looked sleek. It didn't look like a piece of industrial equipment.
Well, say goodbye to it. The renders show a return to a big, unified, rectangular block on the back of the phone. And people are split on this. Some are calling it ugly and industrial.
So why do it? Why go back to a design that people hated?
form follows function. The new specs are just ridiculous. We're talking about a 320 megapixel sensor and a new variable zoom mechanism.
320 megapixels? That sounds excessive. Why do I need that many pixels?
It allows for insane cropping ability. You can take a wide shot and then zoom in on a tiny detail in the corner, and it's still sharp. But physically, you just can't fit that sensor in the old design. They need physical space. They need magnetic shielding so the components don't interfere with each other.
So the island isn't just a style choice. It's a containment unit.
Exactly. And it allows for better cooling. Sensors that big generate heat. If you don't dissipate it, the camera lags or just shuts down. So they're sacrificing the pretty factor for raw power.
It really seems like 2026 is the year where function is winning over form across the board. We need bigger computers for agents, uglier phones for better cameras,
and robots that look like mannequins to do our laundry.
It definitely feels that way. But hey, let's end on a high note, because amidst all this chaos, stock crashing, and design fighting, something good happened for the gaming community today.
Finally, a glimmer of hope.
Code Vein 2 launched this morning. And unlike so many games in the last few years, it works.
The servers held up.
They held up. This is the anime Souls-like genre, which is niche but very passionate. And the first game, while beloved, had some issues.
It did. It was very linear, essentially corridors. You ran down a hallway, fought a monster, ran down another hallway. And the AI partners were a bit weak. But Bandai Namco seems to have actually listened to the feedback.
The reviews are highlighting the world design specifically.
Right. They moved from those linear stages to an interconnected open world, very similar to Bloodborne. Lots of verticality, ladders, hidden shortcuts. That's what fans of this genre crave, exploration. The feeling of being lost and then finding your way back.
And the class system. I read about hybridizing.
Yeah, the blood code system. In the first game, you basically switched classes like changing hats. In this one, you can mix and match abilities from three different classes simultaneously.
Oh, that's huge for build crafting. You aren't locked into one role.
Infinite depth. You can create truly unique playstyles, like a heavy tank that casts magic and moves fast. Mm. But the biggest win, technically speaking, is the netcode.
Rollback netcode. We hear this term a lot in fighting games, but not usually in RPGs.
It's vital here. Code Vein is a co-op game. In a game that's this difficult, where you have to dodge attacks in a split second, you need precise timing. Traditional netcode waits for the data to travel, which causes lag. Rollback predicts the next frame.
So it feels instant.
It guarantees a lag-free experience, even if you're playing with someone on another continent. It's a real technical achievement.
And on PC, the optimization is getting very positive reviews on Steam.
Which is rare, you know. Usually, PC ports are a mess on day one, stuttering, crashing. It's just nice to see a win for the gamers who just want to play something without needing a $100 billion supercomputer or an AI router.
Seriously. It's a reminder that sometimes good code is just good code. So let's zoom out. What a day.
It really is the day of contradictions.
We have OpenAI betting $100 billion on a future of digital agents. We have Microsoft getting punished by the stock market for paying for that future. We have Tesla killing its most famous car to bet the farm on robots. And we have AI entering our Wi-Fi routers.
It just shows the sheer speed of the transition we're in. Even the giants, Tesla, Samsung, Microsoft, they aren't safe. They are being forced into these radical, almost suicidal pivots just to stay ahead of the curve.
That seems to be the lesson. If you stand still in 2026, you die. You have to keep moving, even if it means killing your best-selling product.
Or redesigning your entire aesthetic.
Exactly. Now, before we go, I want to leave you with a question from the discussion pit that really stuck with me. It's a question of heart versus head, and it ties all this together perfectly.
Let's hear it.
Okay, listener. Imagine you have $20,000 cash right now, just sitting there on the table. You have two choices. Choice A, you pre-order an Optimus robot. It arrives in a year, and it promises to do your dishes, fold your laundry, and clean your house for the rest of your life.
Okay, that's the dream of leisure.
Choice B, you take that money and you buy the dip on Microsoft stock after the crash today. You bet on the financial rails of the future.
Oh, that is tough. Logic says the stock. Microsoft isn't going anywhere, and if the agents take off, that stock doubles or triples. You could make a fortune.
No, I know. Logic says buy the asset, but the heart. The heart wants the robot, right? I never want to wash dishes again. I want my weekends back.
The freedom of time versus the freedom of money. That is the ultimate trade-off. But yeah. Honestly, I think I'm with you on that one. I'd take the robot.
I think I would too. Let us know what you'd choose. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
Stay curious.